Hare Krishna Sai Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamane Namaste Sarasada Dev Gauravani Pisharani Nirvishesha Srinivani Bhastacharya Sitarani Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So tonight we're going to read from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 8, Knowledge of the Absolute. Rasoham apsukunte ya pravamsi shashi suryayo pranava sarvisha vedeshu shabda ke parusham nishu. O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable om in the Vedic literatures and Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and the ability in man. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. This verse explains how the Lord is all pervasive by His diverse material and spiritual energies. The Supreme Lord can be preliminarily perceived by His different energies, and in this way He is realized impersonally. As the demigod in the sun is a person and is perceived by His all-pervading energy, the sunshine, so the Lord, although in His eternal abode, is perceived by His all-pervading, diffusive energies. The taste of water is the active principle of water. No one likes to drink seawater because the pure taste of water is mixed with salt. Attraction for water depends on the purity of the taste, and this pure taste is one of the energies of the Lord. The impersonalists perceive the presence of the Lord in water by its taste, and the personalist also glorifies the Lord for His kindly supplying tasty water to quench man's thirst. That is the way of perceiving the Supreme. Practically speaking, there is no conflict between personalism and impersonalism. One who knows God knows that the impersonal conception and personal conception are simultaneously present in everything, and that there is no contradiction. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya established His sublime doctrine, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference. The light of the sun and the moon is also originally emanating from the Brahma Jyotir, which is the impersonal effulgence of the Lord. And pranava, or the omkara, transcendental sound, is the beginning of every Vedic hymn, addresses the Supreme Lord. Because the impersonalists are very much afraid of addressing the Supreme Lord, Krishna, by His innumerable names, they prefer to vibrate the transcendental sound Omkar. But they do not realize that the Omkar is the sound representation of Krishna. The jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness extends everywhere, and one who knows Krishna consciousness is blessed. Those who do not know Krishna are an illusion, and so knowledge of Krishna is liberation, and ignorance of Him is bondage. Verse again, O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable om in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and the ability in man. Om Agyanitam Randisha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksarunitamina Tasma Sri Gurve Namaha Vanchakopatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyabhacha Patitano Pavanabhyo Vaishbhyabhi Namo Namaha. So in this verse and in a few succeeding verses in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is showing us how we can see Him everywhere. Krishna talks about the many elements that He is in and how He is represented by those elements, such as the pure taste of water. In later verses, Krishna declares that He is the strength of the strong. He is the intelligence of the intelligent. So He does represent those very supreme qualities or superior qualities that we see all around us. And He also says that He is the source of all those things. So not only do they represent Him, but they are coming from Him. They are emanating from Himself. So, of course, Krishna is a person. And as devotees of Krishna, we worship the personal form of Krishna. So why is Krishna also saying that he is in all these things within the material world and all these material elements? Because seeing Krishna in nature, in the material elements, in things around us, is a very important step in self-realization and spiritual consciousness. To begin to see God everywhere, to begin to see that Krishna is the source of things, that he is represented by everything we see, and we could say in one sense, Krishna is non-different than the things in this material world. Of course, Prabhupada points out, in another sense, he is different. And that is our sublime teaching of Achintabheda Tattva, or that God, Krishna, is simultaneously, inconceivably, one and different from his creation. So Krishna has created this, but yet he does not lose himself. He does not become dispersed. He does not become distributed throughout everything so that he is no longer anything himself. This is the amazing quality. This is why he is God. Because Krishna or God can create everything. He can distribute it and disperse his energies everywhere, but yet he remains the complete whole. He still remains himself as Krishna. So, the understanding of seeing God in nature, seeing God everywhere, seeing Krishna in the taste of water, or in other places of the scripture we see Krishna as the universal form, or in the Srimad Bhagavatam there's a description of what's called the Bharata Rupa, and in that particular description that talks about Krishna says that that he talks about his form in this material universe, how the mountains are his backbones, etc., things like that. So these are important beginning understandings of spiritual life. Beginning understandings that, yes, there is a Supreme Person, there is a God that is beyond us. But as Prabhupada is pointing out here, this is an impersonal understanding. The initial understanding is often one of that is impersonal. In other words, God isn't necessarily a person, but he may be manifest in nature, or people may see that there's a pervading spiritual energy, or so many things like this. This is the beginning. But it is clear that all of these things, it is not that they're not true, they are true. They are different aspects of realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this understanding of the aspects of Krishna are mentioned specifically right in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It says, Vedanti tad tattva vidanstattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmiti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabyate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. So specifically those three different features of God, of Krishna, are told to us right in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That Krishna has his Brahman feature, which is the impersonal aspect, which is the impersonal energy, Krishna's effulgence is emanating from his body, and is what many people look for as that sort of all-pervading spiritual essence. You know, and of course that's there. Many people look for that sort of impersonal understanding of God being everywhere or God's energy. And that is coming from Krishna. That is one of his energies. And there is Paramatma, the super soul, Krishna within the heart, guiding every living entity. Not only within the heart of every living entity, but Srila Prabhupada has told us that Paramatma is within every atom and between every atom. So certainly Krishna pervades this entire universe in that way. But these are aspects or energies of Krishna in his Bhagavan feature. And Bhagavan is the personal feature of Krishna with all of his qualities, with all of his variety, with his form, his pastimes, his entourage, his devotees all around him, engaged in personal, loving relationships with every living entity in this universe. And not only this universe, but in all universes and throughout the spiritual world. So why are there different realizations? Well, there are different types of people. And Krishna gives a way for all living entities to make advancement in the spiritual world towards the ultimate goal of spiritual realization. to get out of this material world, to get out of the suffering condition, to get out of ignorance and begin to understand their relationship with God. So there are people in different modes of nature, at different stages of advancement, at different stages of realization. So they have different types of attractions to Krishna, and Krishna provides those forms, attractions for all kinds of people. Now, the verse in Bhagavatam says these non-dual substances. What does that mean? Well, Srila Prabhupada explained that. The non-dual means that advanced devotees see everything as Krishna's energy. It's not, well, here's Krishna, then here's Paramatman Bhagavan, and we don't really quite relate to that, or, you know, we don't have any. No, it's all Krishna's energy. The devotee sees this material energy as Krishna's energy. It's certainly different. In fact, Krishna calls it his separated, Bina, his separated material energy. It is not the same as his internal potency, his pure spiritual energy, but yet it is Krishna's energy. And that is what a devotee begins to see. As one makes a little advancement in spiritual life, one understands that there's really nothing different than Krishna, that Krishna is everywhere. And at the same time, Krishna is a person performing his wonderful divine pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan. But there is a difference in the qualities of those energies. And the devotees are interested in Krishna, the person. We want to see Krishna everywhere, but we particularly want to see Krishna in his personal form. There's another verse in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a well-known, it's called the Atmarama verse that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussed. Was Sarvabhauma about the Charya, was it? Was it Prakasananda or Sarvabhauma? Yes. Help me out here. Okay. We think it's Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that he discussed the 64 meanings of the Atmarama verse. Atmaramas Chamunaya Nigrantya Upakrame Kurvantyai Tukam Bhaktim Itam Bhuta Gunahari. All different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in Atma or spirit self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore attracts everyone, including liberated souls. So what this is saying, that even if one is highly advanced in spiritual realization, one understands he's not the body, one understands that I'm the soul, I'm pure spirit soul, that's not enough. One also wants to understand that I am a pure spirit soul, but I'm in relationship with the supreme spirit soul, Krishna. So we see examples of these Atmaramas who became attracted to Krishna, such as Shukadeva Goswami. He was impersonally realized such that he did not want to leave his mother's womb and stay there for 16 years. Many of you on this side of the room can really empathize with that. Imagine, 16 years anyway. Why did he finally decide to take birth? Because he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, Vyasadeva. And upon hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, he became fully enlightened in spiritual realization, in personalism, and therefore wanted to come into this world for the purpose of speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Prickett. We also hear of the four Kumaras, the gatekeepers. No, I'm sorry. The four Kumaras who encountered the gatekeepers, obviously Jai and Vijay, but that's another story. But that's where we know them from the Vaikuntha pastimes. But it was described that they were totally impersonally realized, had absolutely no material desire. In fact, they decided to remain as five-year-old boys so that they wouldn't have to engage in any material activities. Because, you know, as we all know, as you get older, material desires arise, etc. So they thought, we'll just avoid this all. But it's described that when they went to see Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu, that even just smelling the incense that was offered to him in devotion aroused their transcendental senses, not material senses, but their spiritual senses to the point that they understood that the real goal in life was to serve Krishna. So as one advances through these stages, one begins to realize more and more that there's only one object, there's only one goal, There is only one purpose in life, and that is to achieve the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, of Radha and Krishna. But it's not always so easy, and it sometimes takes some time. Very few people come to the stage. We're talking about transcendentalists who are Brahman realized or Paramatma realized. That's very rare. That's a rare soul in this world. Most people are very much absorbed in materialism. Particularly in this modern Western world, materialism is the predominant philosophy. And everything is based upon empiric knowledge, prajaksha. Those things which are based upon sense perception. If I can't see it, I can't feel it, it doesn't exist. I can't understand it, I can't accept it, unless you can show it to me. And therefore we glorify the scientific method, which has its purposes, but it has its problems. And that every one of us is subject to the four defects. We make mistakes, we have imperfect senses, we have the tendency to cheat, and we are definitely all in illusion. What is the main illusion? That we think we are the body, not understanding that our spiritual nature. Therefore, with all of these imperfect senses, imperfections, it's very difficult through these senses to be able to understand spiritual life and understand God. The other problem is we can make some achievements with scientific knowledge, but even those are changing all the time. Of course, many, many centuries ago, people thought the earth was flat because that's what your sensory perception would lead you to believe if you looked out the window. Obviously, the world is flat. Now, of course, that was all later disputed in the 1500s, different explorers, etc. We all know about atoms. We know about neurons and protons and electrons, and I think there's even more now, all sorts of subatomic particles. And subatomic particles, do you know how long we've known about those? When were they first discovered? Of course, they're always there. When were they discovered by scientists? About 1953. I was born before that. So it's not as though all of this scientific knowledge has been with us forever and scientists have already known these things. Now, when do we hear about atomic theory in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which was put in written form 5,000 years ago? In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear about the calculation of time through the movement of the atoms. We see descriptions of the cosmology in Vedic literatures, which talk about not flat earth, but globes in space. In other words, much of what we think was scientific now as modern scientific knowledge was known in the Vedas 5,000 years ago or more. So it's not that we are against science or we are against, you know, any kind of empirical reality. Those things are there, but they've been known for a long time. It's not that wonderful. What has not been known, or what was known and what has been forgotten for the most part in this Kali Yuga, and particularly in the Western world, is spiritual knowledge. So, spiritual knowledge brings us to a different point. One last point I wanted to make. If we look at cosmology and many religious ideas of creation and things like this, you ever heard this expression they call creation myths? In other words, think the religious explanations of things like creation, how the world came to be, they're myths. You know, and I was flying from Mumbai to Indore at our GVC meetings about 3 weeks ago, and I was sitting next to a very nice young Indian man who had visited our temple many times and was very interested, a very nice person to talk to. But he was talking about, he wanted to try to figure out, understand about the Hindu creation myths. So even someone who was very pious, you know, came to our temples, very appreciative, he still thought, well, they're probably just these myths we have in our culture. They're cultural myths. Well, how is this for a myth? This is a description in some reputable, very reputable place like Wikipedia or somewhere on the internet of the Big Bang Theory, which is one of the prominent scientific explanations of the creation of the Earth. It says 10 billion to 20 billion years ago, what's the 10 billion years here or there, a massive blast allowed all the universe's known matter and energy, even space and time themselves, to spring from some ancient and unknown type of energy. This theory maintains that in an instant, 1 trillionth of a second after the Big Bang, the universe expanded with incredible speed from its pebble-sized origin to astronomical scope. Which sounds more like a myth. Yeah. So, getting back to our subject at hand. Krishna does manifest in this world on gross and subtle levels. Krishna has his material energies, he has his spiritual energies. But he always remains complete and untainted by those material energies. And as living entities in this material world, we need to try to understand who God is. We have to understand first who we are. But we can't really understand who we are unless we understand who God is and what is our relationship. So how do we see Krishna? That was our original point here. It's very difficult to see Krishna. You can see Krishna theoretically. You can see God theoretically. Like we just read in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is a taste in water. That's one way of seeing him. And sometimes but we might say, all right, if God is everywhere, why can't I see him? Show him to me. Show me God. Of course, Prabhupada was asked that on more than one occasion. And he would usually answer, we do not have the eyes to see. It is not through material vision that one can see God. We can't snap our fingers, order God to appear before us. Not through our material senses, through our material mind, intelligence, and ego. But, Prabhupada said, we begin to see Krishna, we begin to understand God, not through the eyes, but through the ears, through hearing. It is by hearing about Krishna, hearing the scriptures, the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, that we begin to see Krishna. And then we begin to see Krishna through that, and hearing, of course, means getting, not just hearing, like something going in and out of our ears, but actually having some understanding, some realization. When that realization or understanding of spiritual life, of God realization comes about, we do begin to start seeing how Krishna's energies are working. So first we see Krishna through his energies, just like material energy, as we're talking about here in the Bhagavad Gita, and then later we begin to see Krishna more directly, more personally. But that takes some time and purification. So Krishna's behind everything. Just like, I give this example many times, that there's a government, there's a president, and the president has many departments, he has cabinet members, and they're all in charge of different departments like education or energy or health education, well, you know, whatever they are, defense, the State Department. So, not so much the president maybe, but a king would be a better example. Through these different departments, really rules everything or, you know, manages everything. You know, and so his deputed agents are managing things in this way. The king or the president is in every office and every department, you know, making things happen. But yet at the same time, his energy is there. He's appointing the people. He's overseeing them. So in the same way, Krishna is behind everything, but not so much directly or indirectly. I was having a discussion with some of our family members as we were driving a car. We were a little farther north, and there was leaves falling. Some of you might have ever been in the north. You might remember this happens. It's this strange occurrence where leaves fall from trees. Doesn't happen here much. Well, it does a little bit. But so the question was, if not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord, if Krishna's behind knows everything, then does Krishna will every leaf personally to fall from every tree throughout the entire world, on every planet, all these millions and billions of trees? The answer is yes, but not directly. Through his energies. He's got people to do that, you know? He's got his deputed agents, like 36,000 demigods, things like that. In other words, yes, indirectly, Krishna manages everything. Krishna sets it all up. Krishna makes the rules. Natural law was established by God, by Krishna. You know, but he isn't... let's put it this way. If you were God and you had absolute total power and could do anything you want, would you be sitting around making leaves fall off of trees? Millions of them? No. You would probably be with Radharani and the gopis and the coward boys and Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, you know, just having wonderful, loving relationships in Goloka Vrindavan. That's what Krishna does. You know, but he also has to take care of this other stuff on the side. So we can begin to see Krishna through his energies. This is actually the same verse of Sana Kunti and the Taste of Water from 7-8. This is another purport. It's actually from a lecture the Prabhupada gave on this verse that's printed in that little book on the scene on the way to Krishna, seeing the chapter, seeing Krishna always and everywhere. Prabhupada says, in this verse, Sri Krishna is describing how we can become Krishna conscious fully in all stages of life. All living entities must drink water. The taste of water is so nice that when we are thirsty, nothing but water seems to do. No manufacturer can create the pure taste of water. We can thus remember Krishna or God when we drink water. No one can avoid drinking water every day in his life, so God consciousness is there. How can we forget? So if we actually take these type of instructions from the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna seriously, we will remember Krishna always. We will see Krishna always in this way. As Prabhupada says, how can we forget? So this material energy, unfortunately, this material world is predominated by the external energy, by Prakriti. So our world and perceptual field is composed of interactions with matter, primarily. But the spiritual energy is also present in this material world. The all-pervading Brahman energy, the Paramatma expansion of Krishna within the heart of every living entity, and all living entities. Every living entity, every jiva is spiritual energy. So we also experience the spiritual energy through all other living entities. When you think about it, Prabhupada often say, what's the difference between a live body and a dead body? Everything's there, all the chemicals are there, all the atoms are there. What's gone? The spirit soul. Think about a world that had everything in it that was beautiful, and there was no living entities. There was nothing alive. How could we even like that? How could we enjoy that? How could we possibly even be attracted to that? It is the living force that makes everything attractive. It is the living entities, the living energy, and of course Krishna's energy behind everything that gives life, that gives meaning, that gives attraction to this world. And of course, in the spiritual world, everything is composed of unlimited spiritual energy. So because we are spiritual beings, that is our real home, that is our real place, not this material world. But to go back Godhead, to the spiritual world, where everything is spiritual energy and we are rightly situated and therefore happy. So, how do we begin the process? Well, we begin the process through devotional service, through bhakti. In a purport, Bhagavad Gita 10.9, Srila Prabhupada says, in the preliminary stage of devotional service, devotees relish the transcendental pleasure from the service itself. And in the mature stage, they're actually situated in love of God. So our beginning process is sadhana bhakti. The 9 processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing, chanting, remembering, and of course, serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Then later, one becomes more and more situated in that pure love of God. So, one can be constantly engaged in service. That is a great gift that we have, that this process for Kali Yuga, which is a very, very difficult age for self-realization, for things like meditation, etc., so very, very difficult. We can engage in this process of bhakti yoga, beginning with chanting Hare Krishna, hearing these literatures and chanting Hare Krishna. That's sadhana. Our sadhana develops and maintains that connection with Krishna and further purifies the heart so that we more and more can understand Krishna. Jiva Goswami also describes the 2 forms of bhakti in his purport to 1.1.11 of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says there are 2 forms of bhakti, bhava rupa and chaste rupa bhakti. Bhava rupa is called the emotional form. In other words, that's when one has pure feelings of love for Krishna. And that comes about at the stage of bhava, unfortunately, for most of us. So, since we're not there yet, we have Chaste Rupa Bhakti, which is the active form that Jiva Goswami explains as the use of the body, the words, and the mind in Krishna's service. So that active form of service connects us with Krishna. It connects us with Krishna, pleases Krishna, Krishna purifies us within the heart, so we gain more and more realization of Him. In the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada said, "The execution of devotional service is not a matter of idle meditation, but practical action in the foreground of spiritual life." I always like that. You know, it's like, it probably made it so clear that, you know, probably not such a good idea to just simply try to, you know, sit and meditate by oneself and not do anything. Because usually what happens, well, you might go to sleep. You might start, you know, thinking about all the things you'd like to do, everything else. In other words, it doesn't really work for us. We don't have that sort of control of the mind. But by actively working and serving and hearing and chanting all day, then we can engage the mind. Then we can actually keep our connection with Krishna. So Krishna reveals Himself by degrees, according to our devotion. That full realization may not come till bhava or some higher stage when we begin to actually see and perceive within the heart the Lord. But it's also described in many of our books, like Madhurya Kandambani by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that it's a gradual process, step by step, of perceiving Krishna little by little, bit by bit. And that realization of Krishna and understanding of this philosophy of Krishna consciousness comes about through the purified heart. Bhagavad Gita 11:54, Krishna says, "My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding." And Prabhupada says, "One who has unflinching devotion for the Supreme Lord and is directed by the spiritual master, in whom he has similar unflinching faith, can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead by revelation. One cannot understand Krishna by mental speculation. For one who does not take personal training under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, it is impossible to even begin to understand Krishna." And I will end with a verse from the Brahma Samhita, text 38. "I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shama Sundara, Krishna Himself, with inconceivable, innumerable attributes, whom the pure devotees see in their heart of hearts with the eye of devotion, tinged with the salve of love." The purport. I'm assuming, I didn't write it down, I'm assuming it's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati who wrote the purports to Brahma Samhita. "The eye of devotion is nothing but the eye of the pure, unalloyed spiritual self of the jiva. The form of Krishna is visible to that eye in proportion to its purification by the practice of devotion. When the devotion of the neophyte reaches the stage of bhava bhakti, the pure eye of that devotee is tinged with the salve of love by the grace of Krishna, which enables him to see Krishna face to face. The phrase, in their hearts, means Krishna is visible in proportion as their hearts are purified by the practice of devotion." So in this way, we continue this process of purification, and gradually, little by little, we will certainly see Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. So, any questions, comments, thoughts? Okay. Must be time for prasadam. All right, Srila Prabhupada.